welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024. Telecom companies impose new tariffs on their clients in South Sudan.
Before, when you put the bundles, you can able to use that bundle in the internet. It can take you some minutes. But nowadays, you put the 100 bundles. They say it is for 1 week. For example, subscribe for 1 week. But that bundle will not reach 1 week.
And former governor of Central Darfur State talks about his journey from Zalinje to Washington. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Residents of Eastern Equatorial State say high tariff charges levied by telecommunication networks in the country are too high compared to the neighboring countries. They say the recently increased rates could hurt communication across the country. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from the Eastern Equatorial State capital, Torit.
The MTN, Zain and Digital Telecommunication Company have been offering service across Eastern Equatorial State, including the capital Torit. Some residents of Torit and its surrounding village say company's fee are too high. John Wani Simon is a businessman in Torit. He depends on the telecom network to promote his business and says the newly increased rates could affect his income.
Before, when you put the bundles, you can able to use that bundle in the internet. It can take you some minutes. But nowadays, you put the 100 bundles. They say it is for 1 week. For example, subscribe for 1 week. But that bundle will not reach 1 week. It will just within hours, that bundle gets finished. Then you have to keep subscribing. So it is actually a burden. It has affected the businesses. Sometimes, you know, to advertise your business to the customers. But since they increased these tariffs, it has affected this business so much.
Oduho Joseph Aliardo works in the Torit Municipality Council. He says high tariff could prevent residents from communicating with their loved ones.
When I loaded some bundles to write, maybe to apply, before I send my document, even it load until it just cut my document before reaching the person I am applying. Even at the moment, people are start leaving phones inside the house because of this increment. If this thing continues like that, then people will go back to traditional way of communication.
Athien James Makwach, the administrative manager of Digital South Sudan, says telecom companies are operating in a challenging conditions.
The tariff increment, you know the economic crisis of South Sudan. For us to reach wider and serve our people equally, we must do it at cost. And for us to serve our customers with quality network, quality internet, quality voice, quality comes with a cost. And that is our stand. We also believe to rectify and correct whatever that may put our customers at bay so that we harmonize. Nobody determines now the status of the economy in this country.
Over the past years, the war in neighboring Sudan has cut South Sudan's oil exports, while floods, intercommunal violence, and other factors have driven up prices for many goods. The State Minister of Information, Elia John Ahaji, says peace and security could attract investors in the country.
It is very difficult for us, the government, to control. And also bearing in mind that the other commodity prices in the market are also rising, right from petrol, food commodities. So mobile network operators could not be an exception in this case. Where business people feel insecure, there is high risk. They tend to get their profit within the shortest time possible. And if we could promote peaceful environment, I believe the business community of which mobile network operators are inclusive will be having confidence, they will be having projection. So as such, the prices will always definitely become stable.
Earlier this week, South Sudan's three main telecom operators, MTN, Zain and Digitel, have announced tariff increases, citing foreign exchange fluctuations. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
From Torit, we move to Darfur, where the former governor of Central Darfur State, Adib Yusuf, was trapped in Zalinje when conflict erupted in the country last year. Governor Yusuf was involved in assisting families in need of special care during the fighting in Zalinje town and other parts of Darfur. He also coordinated activities through a nonprofit called People to People to distribute help to residents in Darfur, who were caught up in battle zones within residential areas as fighting between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudan Armed Forces intensified in Darfur. Governor Adib Yusuf is with me in the studio. Welcome, Governor Yusuf.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for making this time for me to be with you.
I know when the crisis in Sudan erupted, I have been following closely and even messaging you. There was a time you were not online for almost a month. What happened?
Yeah, in fact, when the conflict erupted in Sudan, the first target was the communication companies where I was in central Darfur, in particular in Zalinje. So all the communication companies were destroyed, and that is why I lost communication with everybody outside Zalinje until I came out. So it is part of the larger destruction in the city and in Darfur that goes beyond the communication companies to UN agencies, to international organizations, buildings, warehouses, offices, and then also to commercial centers, markets, universities, hospitals, and all government buildings.
Correct. When the violence erupted in April last year, many Sudanese decided to leave the country, go to Kenya, go to South Sudan, go to Central African Republic, Egypt, and Ethiopia. But you stayed back. You did not leave. Why?
Yes, because for me, I decided to remain for many reasons. A, because my father was seriously sick. B, because I wanted to help the people there. And I decided that if I want the people to live a decent life, or to mitigate this conflict, I have to be with them and struggle with them. That's why from the early beginning, from April 15 at 3 o'clock p.m., we start providing some kind of assistance to the injured people at the hospitals, and also receiving some new IDPs in different parts of the city.
And talk to me about the situation you left there in Zalinje, because the town was bombed. We got reports that the town was bombed. When you were leaving Zalinje, talk to me about what you saw.
In fact, I saw everything. I saw it all. I saw it in Zalinje, and I saw it on my way throughout Darfur to Kordofan, and then up to Port Sudan. So what is happening there with the destruction that I talked about, it is not only limited to Zalinje as a capital city, but also it goes to Al Jineina in West Darfur, Niala in South Darfur, and now the conflict that is going on in Al Fashir of North, the capital city of North Darfur. This conflict is more of an urban conflict. And if you look keenly to how it started even in the capital city of the of Sudan. So it affects all the big cities in Sudan. Mm-hmm. So, and that is why the destruction was too much. In fact, the destruction of all
institutions on the ground, yeah. You know, physical infrastructure. Talk to me about the condition of people
who have not been able to leave the country. I know in Sudan, bread is a necessity. People must have bread every day. People must have sugar, rice, and the rest. These items are not there in the market. Where do people get their food?
In fact, one of the greatest challenges that facing people in Darfur is how to deal with the humanitarian and their basic need. The humanitarian situation is getting worse every single day due to many reasons. The war is the first reason. The people are not able to go out to cultivate. The rainy season was not that good. All the international agencies working on humanitarian aid and so, they left once and for all. And that's what makes the situation, the humanitarian situation, very bad. We are facing shortages of food, and that it may lead to starvation. We're already in the face of malnutrition in different part of Darfur. So the humanitarian situation today is worse than ever before.
Let's talk about the faith of those who are not from Sudan, because after South Sudan separated from Sudan, a lot of South Sudanese did not return to their home country. And some of them are spread all over, including Darfur. Talk to me about the situation of South Sudanese who were trying to leave the country as fighting was, you know, spreading across towns in Sudan.
Yeah, I think, in fact, I believe the South Sudanese, they suffered too much because they were there at the margin of the cities, if it's there in Khartoum or in Darfur or so. Some of them are at refugee camps. So when the fighting started, they have no option. They flee like other Sudanese.
Correct.
And they pass South Sudan. Some of them, they were unable to live even in South Sudan.
Yeah, some could not bear the conditions in South Sudan, and they moved to the neighboring countries.
Yeah, so I've been working now in Uganda. Many South Sudanese from Khartoum, they passed South Sudan and then they reached Uganda.
And talk to me about the social cohesion in Sudan. I mean, before the separation of Sudan and South Sudan, it was one country, and Sudanese are known for being what you would call brothers or sisters keepers. Is that still the case now in the backdrop of scarcity of food items, humanitarian crisis? Are people still caring for one another? Talk to me about that.
Yes, I think that phenomenon is still there, and it is one of the strong reason why today people are surviving. So there is mutual aid, a mutual aid groups, so people, they share whatever they have. In addition to this emergency response room, there is also other initiatives that are working there. So all this is based on communal interventions. So brotherhood or sisterhood or the friendship between the and the collaboration between the communities still exists. And without that, because as I mentioned, all the international organizations, they left. So they left these local people to struggle by themselves.
And just a final question here. You left Zalinje following the Sudanese refugees wherever they are going, and you found yourself in Kampala. Talk to me about some of the activities you are doing to help these refugees depend on themselves or be self-reliant. Let's just be brief on that front.
Yeah, so as you said, we are doing that. And one thing that we are doing in Kirandongo refugee camp.
Yes.
So we are putting a communal center. We call it Hope Multipurpose Center. We are training the refugees on income generative activities, mainly SOP among other activities, in order to rely and depend on themselves.
All right. Thank you very much, Governor Adib Yusuf. This is an opportunity that's very rare for us here at Voice of America. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was former governor of Central Darfur State, Adib Yusuf, who is narrating how he left Sudan and ended up helping refugees in Uganda.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Americans living in Kenya perform their civic duties. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and our words of wisdom for this Wednesday comes from the Lango community in Eastern Equatoria State.
Hello, VOA. I'm Bertin Blomole with the proverb from my roots, the Lango of South Sudan, from Equator County of Eastern Equatoria State, which says, Nafima, neto dovigi, nabovegigi, the fire dropped by you, if it doesn't burn you, it will burn your children. Meaning, your poor stay with the people will return to you and your children. Thank you.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As the November elections draw closer and the campaign intensifies in the United States, American citizens living thousands of miles in Kenya are staying engaged. VOA reporter Juma Majanga spoke with some U.S. experts in Nairobi to find out how they are staying connected to politics back home.
American expert Robin Emerson lives in Nairobi's Kilimani suburbs, located 5 kilometers west of the city's central business district. Despite being thousands of miles away from her homeland, Emerson has remained actively involved in election issues back home. She chairs the Kenyan chapter of Democrats Abroad, an umbrella organization of the Democratic Party supporters living abroad. Emerson says, irrespective of where in the world they are, it is important for American citizens to participate in elections in their native country.
It's important and it's significant for us to continue to hold the founding tenet of democracy and allowing every person to exercise their right. And so even though U.S. citizens live abroad around the world, we still have the opportunity to express ourselves of the direction that we want our country to go.
The U.S. is one of the only 2 countries in the world that imposes a global taxation policy on expatriates, the other being the East African country, Eritrea. Emerson says, as a citizen living abroad, among the issues important to her in this year's election is the issue of taxation.
There are many tax issues that even as a citizen that still impact us. And so your vote is your voice. And so we encourage everyone to exercise that because one way or the other, we are responsible and we are impacted. And our vote can make a difference for everybody, not just in the U.S., but also around the world.
Joanne Okorododo, another American citizen living in Nairobi, says she voted from abroad in the 2020 elections and will be doing the same this year. The 66-year-old businesswoman says the significance of the diaspora vote cannot be underscored, especially in a closely contested election.
We must not be complacent. We must try and vote. I have never stopped voting. You know, as an American citizen, I've always voted. I will continue to vote, even if I have to crawl to vote, you know. But, yeah, it's very important to vote. And especially for this year.
The Democrats Abroad Kenyan chapter estimates that approximately 30,000 American expatriates reside in the country. Emerson says they have been holding voter information and registration drives to encourage American citizens living in Kenya to vote and participate in the election back home.
One of the things that many U.S. citizens around the world need to know, again, is just reminding them that they have this right. So we have a duty to reach out to them and to be able and be available wherever U.S. citizens are, and to be there and answer questions that they might have about this. How do I do this? Why should I do this? What's necessary? So we're at various places around Kenya.
VOA contacted some expatriates who support the Republican Party. However, they declined to sit down for an interview. Emerson and Okoro Dodo say they are not only keenly following the elections in their country, but also participating in it, albeit from a distance. Juma Janga, VOA Africa, Nairobi.
Still on U.S. elections, across the country, about 14 million voters are members of unions. Workers' organizations form to protect their rights. Although union members make up a small part of the American electorate, presidential candidates eagerly seek their endorsement. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports from Nevada, where unions have a powerful voice in this year's presidential election.
At a rally for Vice President Kamala Harris, excitement among union workers for her plan to end taxes on tips or gratuities that workers receive. Tani Castrol is a union representative for casino workers.
I know that Vice President Kamala Harris has a plan, a clear plan, to end federal taxes on tips for us service workers here in Nevada. That's right, that's right. And that Donald Trump, pretending he is the tipped worker's savior, is a dangerous lie.
Former President and Republican candidate Donald Trump has also visited the city that relies on the service industry to promote his plan of no taxes on tips for casino dealers, waitresses, and housekeepers. Dee Dee Lima is a Trump supporter.
That is going to be adored by the employees, by all of the employees, particularly that don't have salaries and that they work on tips. That's going to be loved by them.
Trump has also earned the support of the Las Vegas Police Department. Steve Gromis is the president of the Las Vegas Protective Police Association.
The majority of our citizens trust law enforcement. And so if law enforcement says, hey, we believe this person has our best interests at heart, that they're going to keep you safe, that they're going to try and make our economy thrive, that people trust what we say.
Gromis has spoken about Trump's support for law enforcement at numerous rallies.
A man like Donald Trump and his campaign has always stood by us and said, no, I'm not going to bend to the winds of politics.
The endorsement of the tens of thousands of union workers employed in Nevada is eagerly sought by presidential candidates. Vice President Harris also earned the endorsement of the local Teamsters Union, but the National Organization of Freight Drivers and Warehouse Workers declined to endorse either presidential candidate. Some voters here in Nevada see that as an important sign.
Well, they always went Democratic. So now if they're not doing Democratic, that means they must be leaning towards who? Trump.
But the Culinary Workers Union in Las Vegas did endorse Harris. Ted Papageorge is the group's secretary treasurer.
Working class voters are smart. They're not dumb, and they are a little skeptical. But the problem with President Trump is that he lies, and he lies a lot. However, Vice President Harris, this is part of an overall program to tackle the cost of living.
And they're knocking on doors to let voters know.
We're just canvassing for Kamala Harris.
Okay.
Okay.
We're all voting for her.
Claudia Monreal is a member of the Culinary Workers Union.
Big corporations coming in and price gouging us on food, gas, you know, rent. So having, you know, the right candidate in office, you know, telling them the correct information, what I know as facts, that, you know, Kamala's going to be there for us, the middle class, the union members.
Union members here in Nevada, one of just a handful of swing states that decide the presidential election, could end up casting the deciding vote. Catherine Gibson in Las Vegas, Nevada, VOA News.
From politics, we go to matters to do with press. Press freedom was the key highlight at the Global Leadership Forum, which was launched on Monday in Washington. The meeting, which takes place each year, brings mid-career professionals from around the world to explore critical global challenges. Moses Habyarimana reports.
More than 140 participants attended Monday's meeting, including journalists and human rights defenders under the Humphrey Fellowship Program, a U.S. government-funded program which allows mid-career professionals the opportunity to enhance their leadership skills. This year, media freedom took the center stage. Nkosi Kona Dibiti is a Zimbabwean journalist and founder of a community media organization. He's among the speakers at the forum.
The media plays that watchdog role that allows to raise alarm and let people know that this is what is happening to human rights activists, defenders, or even to the broader society. We have had a lot of media reform. However, there are some concerns in terms of how media's role is in terms of ensuring that journalists themselves are protected from violations, and while they are doing their role.
Calls for press freedom comes as Reporters Without Borders released its 2024 report indicating a worrying decline in support and respect for media autonomy and an increase in pressure from the state or other political actors. In Africa, the report indicated that military juntas that seized power in coups in the Sahel, especially in Niger, Burkina Faso and Mali, continue to tighten their grip. Omar Zombre is a veteran journalist and co-founder of a non-profit organization for journalists in Burkina Faso.
There are some countries that are still having some challenges. We want a society that seek for improvement, a society that is seeking for progress. Then we need to see how this society is dealing with freedom of press. Freedom of press is very important. It's one of the metrics of democracy.
Africa remains among worst performing continents in as far as press freedom is concerned, but there are similar problems elsewhere as well. Press freedom is also under threat in Montenegro, a country in southeastern Europe, despite the country's constitution and laws guaranteeing freedom of speech and expression. Bojana Dabovic is a journalist and editor in one of the media houses there, who says that some journalists are now transitioning to other professions or are practicing self-censorship due to continued attack and harassment.
Journalists in Montenegro, me included, are facing threats, harassments, even physical attacks, with high-profile cases which have been remained unresolved. I would say that overall, Montenegro's press freedom remains fragile, with ongoing challenges that impede a fully independent media freedom.
A recent report from the Committee to Protect Journalists painted a bleak picture for sub-Saharan Africa. It indicates that the number of journalists incarcerated in 2023 rose to 47 compared to 31 in 2022. Next month, the African Union will be commemorating the 10th International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. It comes at a moment between 2006 and 2024, when more than 1,700 journalists have been killed around the world, with close to 9 out of 10 cases of these killings remain judicially unresolved. Moses Habyarimana for Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024. We now leave you with P-Square and the song Chop Your Money, Chop My Money Rather. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineers, Saida Hamdun, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Yeah, even though I got much more.